Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show podcast on the Cross Global Media Radio Network. Visit cgmradio.com/Bob to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
You'd like to believe in God, but would it take an actual prophet sent from the heavenly, sent by God himself, to predict this crazy 2020 election? Or will it perhaps take my good friend, National Review contributor Mike Friedenberg, who was here 4 years ago at this time? He's been on the show since, but the most landmark time was 4 years ago when he predicted, and was one of the few people in the country making the prediction, Trump's astounding win in 2016, a win that the Democrats still have not admitted to, even though they're always asking Trump, and they're asking him already, will he concede this election? And I'm going, dudes, you still haven't conceded the last election. But anyway, Mike is back. He's with us tonight. Now, no pressure, Mike. We're all friends here. No pressure. But I want to hear an accurate prediction again. I want it to go for Trump. I want you to be correct, not politically correct, just really honestly correct. So no pressure, but that's my Christmas wish list.
Well, Bob,
I can't make a Thanksgiving wish list because Governor Newsom has regulations about Thanksgiving.
Got a lot to cover tonight. Before we go on, though, let me just say that I'm a tier two prophet, which means I'm not 100% accurate.
Oh, okay. The old, yeah.
One of the tier two, okay.
Yeah. Biblical blasphemy, but perhaps in the world of political predictions, we will accept
that. No stoning, please. Okay.
No.
Okay. If I have hand
no
up to
stoning,
be wrong.
But if we do stone, you can just say you didn't inhale and we'll do that kind of stoning.
Oh, thanks, Bob. Okay. This whole election is interesting. We're seeing a lot of stuff out there that if we ignored the polls and we ignored the fact that we have a COVID-19 situation, you'd be saying, huh, this looks pretty good for Donald Trump. I mean, I just want to kind of use a little bit of a fun analogy. You know, Joe Biden's numerous statements on his attempt to shut down fracking and eliminate the oil industry, they don't actually mean what they say. Repeat after me. Joe will not shut down fracking. Nothing to concern you. Nothing to see. You can move along. Move along. Have you seen the latest poll by the Quinnipiac University showing Trump down by 35 points? 30,000 car caravan of Latinos in Miami for Trump. 30,000 cars. Nothing to see here.
But didn't Joe get a whomp and six people at one of his rallies last week?
Nothing to see here. Move along. Have you seen the latest ABC Washington poll? Basically, we have sort of a Jedi mind trick here. We're supposed to just...
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the... Right. This is not the data... The evidence that you are seeing here is not the real evidence that shows Joe is corrupt. Time, nothing to see here. Time to move along.
And Mike, I know why they're doing it. You tell me if you agree, so that when he wins, they're planning on him winning, and then they're going to say, he must have cheated because our polls could not have been wrong. And then if he wins by a landslide, people are saying, well, then he's got to win by a landslide. They'll say, no, the fact that he won by a landslide and Joe Biden was up 12 points, that really proves they cheated. They are planning on Trump winning, and they are planning on contesting it. Nancy Pelosi already gave a speech saying it will not be over Tuesday night. She's already said that ahead of time.
Yep.
She's revealing what she's planning to do.
So, and then that finally, yes, these are actually peaceful protests. What you see is violence, nothing to see here.
Yeah.
Move along, nothing to see here.
Yeah, those buildings that burnt down, that's because of peace.
Okay. So before we talk about the polls that seem to predict doom and gloom for Donald Trump, I want to talk about some things other than polls necessarily. There's a ton of evidence out there, and there's a whole lot of other models that are used to predict elections other than the polls by CNN or the polls by Washington Post, you know, or ABC CN poll, things like that. There's a poll that was done by J.P. Morgan, not a poll, but a model. They did analysis of registration trends. And what they concluded is, that this is JP Morgan, the gigantic financial institute. So they used big data analytics. They suggest that Trump will win Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Florida by bigger margins than 2016. It also suggests that Trump will hold Arizona, and he'll be very close in Arizona, in Nevada, excuse me, but that likely Nevada will stay blue. Okay. So that's another thing that can counter the polls there. Voters will support a candidate. Well, let's ask this question. Are voters going to support a candidate who supports the narrative that America is systemically racist and that America's founding was a blot upon the history of the world? Or are they going to support a candidate that believes America is essentially a good and not racist? I think the answer on that, even in today's world, is that voters in general do not support this crazy narrative that we've been hearing.
But there seem to be a lot of people that do support the crazy narrative. They may not be the majority, thank goodness, but an awful lot of people do support
it. But the ones that don't support it aren't being put on TV and being asked to talk about it. So that was to say
that. Is true. That is true. And people are afraid they'll have their house burnt down if they promote Trump or put a Trump sign on their lawn.
Then you have the NORPATH model, which looks at primaries. And this model has been correct 25 out of 27 times. This model gives Trump a 91% chance of re-election.
See, now this is news we're not hearing a lot.
No. Law enforcement. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, he's got law enforcement.
Okay. Well, think about it. There's 700.
He's the only politician not calling them them to be defunded. Of course he has law enforcement.
750 to 800,000 law enforcement officers in this country. Every one of them has friends and family. The impact on that is tens of millions of people. And there's polling that suggests that Trump picked up 80% of the law enforcement vote in 2016. If possible, it's going to be greater this time. So that's a massive underlying current of support that might not be picked up.
I cannot imagine a single police officer in this country that wouldn't support Trump after the way they retreated this year.
Then another reason that we might consider President Trump's election chance to be a little bit better than the polls suggest is just Joe Biden himself and Kamala Harris. I mean, those are the candidates.
Oh, Mike, you called her Kamala. It's supposed
Kamala.
To be Kamala or Kamala.
Okay.
Herself Kamala all the time. I've seen her.
Point here, just because from a time perspective, but Joe Biden is the worst candidate they've run. People are trying to say he's better than Hillary Clinton. No, he's not. Hillary Clinton had an order of magnitude more enthusiasm and support than Joe Biden does.
And she didn't have much enthusiasm, but she does have more than Joe Biden.
Nothing
like Trump had.
Nothing like Trump, but
more
than
Biden,
there's
certainly.
There's no comparison between her and Biden.
And Bernie Sanders had enthusiasm. Yeah. College, free, healthcare, free.
Now, Wells Fargo did an analysis, and they saw a number of factors that are going to be in Trump's favor. One was the Supreme Court nomination. They saw that as being a positive. Gun ownership, we'll talk a little bit more about that later on, and the African-American vote coming up. So they believe that the gap between Trump and Biden will narrow prior to the election, especially in the swing states. That's not much time left for that, but that's what they believed at the time they did the study, which was a couple weeks ago. The Gallup poll has a historically high number of people, 56%, stating that they are better off than they were 4 years ago. This is the highest pre-election number ever, and no incumbent has lost with anything near 50%. So they're at 56%, and no incumbent that above 50% has ever lost in a re-election effort. That's Gallup. That goes back quite a ways. All right, then you get this is a little bit more complex, but various data and anecdotes suggest that the surge in voting is not necessarily being driven by young millennials and other anti-Trump voters. Indeed, it's actually being driven by white working-class guys who didn't vote in 2016, that are now saying, hey, Trump's the real deal. There's a lot of evidence to support that these people are coming out. Infrequent voters, voters that never voted, white working class men are coming out in droves to support Donald Trump.
Well, doesn't the fact that they're white just make them racist just by being white? Aren't you ashamed to even call them white on our radio, Mike?
Yeah, I guess I'll have to get through that and continue the
show.
Go
ahead
and
continue.
Now, there's a pollster who has said he has seen movement toward Trump's from younger people who do not want lockdowns. I'll talk more about that later on. In Arizona, there was rallies in Bullhead City and Goodyear. 45% of those who signed up for the Trump rally in Bullhead City did not vote in 2016, and nearly a quarter were not Republican. These are Trump rallies.
Yeah, I have heard there's an awful lot of Democrats turning to Trump.
In Pennsylvania, there was 3 recent rallies, and 25% of the signups for Trump's recent rallies, 3 of them, had not voted in 2016. That's just evidence to support what I'm saying.
Well, I'm sure that's why the Democrats went crying to the court to get the extension of ballots to come in so that the week after the election, they could get more ballots coming in.
So one of the most accurate pollsters from 2016 is saying that this year we're going to have a lot of dormant and low propensity voters voting. The models who are going to churn out from the mainstream media are very flawed. What type of person comes out for Trump? They are not your normal election participant. They are a low propensity voter. We've included them in all of our surveys in 2016, and we are including them now. We'll be talking about this pollster a little bit later. That's Robert Cahaly at Trafalgar. Gun ownership surge. In 2020, more than 15.4 million guns have been purchased. In September alone, 1.6 million guns. A 61% increase from the same month in 2019. Mark Oliva of the National Sports Shooting Foundation said, this is a year like unlike any other. I've stopped using the word unprecedented. It's losing its power. Women are leading the way in new gun purchases, as well as African Americans.
Well, can you blame them? When they call the police now, the police may not come.
Right. So in 10 of the last 12 presidential elections, a majority of gun owners have supported Republican candidates. Even when Dems won the presidency, gun owners remained loyal to Republicans. So in 2016, Donald Trump garnered over 60% of gun owners, which was the largest share since Bush in 2004. In 2018 midterms, 61% of gun owners voted for Republican candidates. So when we're talking about this huge share surge in new gun owners, at the bare minimum, we can say that over 50% of them almost certainly are going to be supporting Trump, which is a net positive for him and his reelection. And by the way, gun rights, but now we're not, we start talking about the committed Second Amendment people, not just gun owners, the people that are really big on that issue. They get out and they vote, and they're religious about their voting. So they're going to be out supporting Trump. There's no doubt.
Well, of course, they don't want Beto O'Dork coming to their door to collect their guns, which is what Biden promised would happen.
Then we have a model called the Keys to the White House. This was put together by an academic by the name of Alan Lichtman in about 1984. There's 13 keys. And since 1984, it's been 100% accurate who's going to win the presidency. This year, Lichtman came out. He predicted Trump in 2016.
I saw him on Fox News. It was disappointing, but I know you have a different take on
this. I do have a different take.
So go ahead and share.
So I won't go into this detail, but if you want to look it up, it's Alan Lichtman. It's called The Keys of the White House. There's 13 keys. If five or more of the keys turn out to be false, then what happens, then basically Lichtman says the candidate's going to lose. And in this case, he had six keys being false, because what he did is there was keys number 10 and 11. Number 10 being, is the candidate charismatic? He stated that Donald Trump is not charismatic, which made that character false.
Donald Trump is not charismatic. I mean, say what you want about the guy, even if you think he's rude. The guy's charismatic. You got to give him, you can hate him, you got to at least give him that.
Right. He is charismatic. There's by any definition. So that was
Biden bumbles and stumbles into a room and they're saying Trump isn't charismatic. Well,
and it doesn't matter what the other candidate's like. It's just the person who's running for re-election. And Trump is charismatic. I'm sorry.
I don't know, Mike. I think those 25,000 people at the rallies are there because he's not charismatic.
And then the other one that he said was false, which I think was wrong, is that he said that it's true if the candidate that's running for re-election has had major foreign policy accomplishments. He says that's false. Well, I think that it's true. I think that the Mideast peace agreements that are being signed are major foreign policy accomplishments.
You were telling me earlier, you were saying he was claiming that Trump didn't even have those major.
That's right. He was claiming he doesn't have them.
So four Nobel Peace Prize nominations don't count.
And the actual people signing peace agreements.
Yeah.
Along with
unlike
ISIS.
Barack Obama's when he got one and nobody was signing anything. They just gave it to him because he was Barack Obama.
Eliminating ISIS. So
Well, if you're going to bring up eliminating ISIS and things like that. Yeah, sure, Mike. You're going to mention that one.
So I'm going to help out Dr. Lichtman here, and I'm going to help this model stay accurate once again. By flipping those two criteria, Donald Trump is now predicted to be reelected by the keys of the White House.
You were telling me you believe that Lichtman's under some pressure. Why do you believe that is?
I don't know it by anything explicit. I just know that if you're an academia right now, and if you're just anybody who's predicting any kind of success for Trump is considered to be a traitor.
So academia's gotten so PC. Even if someone said, I don't know what Lichtman feels, but let's assume he gets up and says, I hate Trump, but my model still predicts he's going to win. Even that's not politically correct enough for today's academia.
Because you're lending aid and comfort to the enemy.
Because you're lending aid and comfort to people that aren't buying our narrative that's trying to overturn the election and claim he cheated because it doesn't match our great polling.
Then we get to issues-oriented voters. If you're an issues-oriented voter, like somebody who's pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, you care about trade in China, any of those people that went ahead and rolled the dice, some of them felt they were rolling the dice to go with Trump in 2016, They are thrilled. He's the most pro-life president ever. He's been awesome on the Second Amendment issue, and he's been great on trade issues, and he's been tough on China. So if any, if you're one of those issues-oriented voters, you're going to be very, very happy with Donald Trump. So that's another reason, why he is poised to be reelected, I believe. Foreign policy and defense. Well, if you're somebody who believes in a strong defense, you've got to be happy with Donald Trump. There's no doubt about it. And then there's people in this country, and we'll talk maybe a little bit more about them, but there are sections in this country of people that are maybe a bit socially conservative, a little bit conservative, but they also don't like being involved in endless wars. And there's a good chunk of these peoples out in Wisconsin and Minnesota. Well, no new foreign wars and pulling us out of wars
and also, reducing. And like you said earlier, crushing ISIS. So he's willing to go to war if we're going to win. He's not willing to just send us there for years and policing the world. That's the difference.
In the past, I have heard people say that if we can get the black vote up to 12 to 15%, it's the end of the Democrat Party.
And hasn't it gone up way more than that?
Well, you never know until they actually vote. But I will say this is that numerous commentators, including liberal commentators, have said it's always been a history of like 3-4 weeks out, a month out, you see an uptick in black support for the Republican candidate. But by the time you're 2 weeks out, it disappears. It goes back down to 8%. This time, we're seeing that support stay up. It's never been like this before. In the 15% range, the 20% range.
Candace Owens range. And the Blexit movement has been phenomenal.
And there's other people. Kanye West made a difference.
Well, one Herschel rapper Walker. After another, except for there was one rapper whose girlfriend got mad at him and he walked it back.
That's right.
All right, I don't want to sleep on the couch. I don't support Trump.
Okay, so bottom line is we're going to see a significant improvement in his support from the black community and a big uptick from the Latino community. Now, election expectations versus intent. An intent is when you poll somebody who says, yeah, I'm intending to vote for this candidate. Expectations would be like you say, hey, how do you think your neighbor is going to vote? Or who do you think is going to win the election? You're forgetting about who you're voting. Who do you think is going to win the election? That's expectations. Brookings did a large study on this to figure out which is more predictive, expectations or intent. This went back to the 1950s, and they found in 60 out of 77 cases, the expectations were more predictive.
Yeah.
So, and right now, Trump is winning way ahead. When they ask the question, now 3 or 4 polling agencies now are now doing this, including Fox. Trump is running 18 to 20 points ahead on when you ask the question, who do you think your neighbor's going to vote for? Trump's way ahead in that question.
So it's, are you going to vote for him? Oh, no, not me, but I think he's going to win.
I think my neighbor might be voting for him.
Yeah.
That neighbor, that crazy neighbor.
My neighbor, so please don't TP my house.
Okay. Then as a thought experiment, let's for a moment put aside all the polling that predicts Trump's demise and look at what's actually happening in the country. Not even during Reagan's years have I seen this kind of spontaneous demonstrations of the support we have been seeing for Trump. Then you throw in the massive rallies that sell out with almost no notice, and you're looking at a historically large gap in voter enthusiasm. Other indicators of voter enthusiasm, such as merchandise sales, signage, local sales of Biden and Trump cookies. In fact, there's throughout the country, there's like little shops that put out cookies, and this is various things like that. You could buy a Biden cookie or a Trump cookie. In virtually all those types of informal polls, which actually have been highly predictive in the past, Trump is winning those.
Well, this is great news, Mike. So far, Mike, I am not disappointed.
Okay, and then this is one that I believe is true, and I've been talking to other people. There's a sense that voters are starting to get fed up with the irresponsible coronavirus narrative being pumped by the media and some health officials. And that Trump's message of getting back to work and normalcy is resonating. I think that may just be happening at about the right time. People are rejecting the lockdowns. They want to work. And the Biden narrative of more lockdowns and mandatory masking, if he maybe had been talking about it a month ago, maybe, but now it's a loser.
Well, you know what? And I heard a pollster on Fox News saying when they watched the debate, they were talking about people in their 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. Generally, the younger the people, the less they like Trump. But when they heard Biden say we're going to continue to be locked down and Trump said we need to open up, that may have just swayed it for them. Even people that aren't even following politics, that may have just done it because people are fed up with this.
Now, there's a guy in Griffith University over, I think it's in England, His name is Bela Stantic. In 2016, he's not a political guy. He's a data analyst, big data guy. He did analysis using social sentiment analysis, Facebook, all the social media. He accurately predicted 49 out of the 50 states where they would go to Trump or to Clinton. This time he did the same analysis in September and predicted a Trump win by 270 to 280. But then a couple weeks ago, so after he did the major analysis, he redid Florida, and he said Florida is even more solid than it was back in September. So there we go. There's another piece of data for you.
Well, and Florida is one of the states that is completely opening up now, and they're seeing that everything's fine. And
yep. And then we take the Trump's overall record of accomplishment on foreign policy, trade, criminal justice reform, and the economy, and that has got to count for something. It counts for something. It's certainly a positive for him. And then here's another one that just made me think of this, is right now we have all these the major cities and smaller cities. You have all the downtowns, the merchants and everybody else running out to board up their windows.
Yeah, and they know that the Democratic mayors and the Democratic governors are not helping them at all, that they're telling the police to stand down. So they might have been Democrats all their lives, and they'd be fed
but
up with
think
them.
Think about that. Do people really, if Biden wins, do people really expect the conservatives and the Republicans come screaming downtown to tear apart the downtown and destroy the businesses?
They know otherwise.
Okay, so the fact that all these people are doing that means their expectation is a Trump win.
Right, and they probably don't want to mention that they're going to vote for Trump because they're afraid that their business will get burnt down again, but that's probably exactly how they're thinking. They'll walk into the polling booth, they'll look both ways over their shoulders, and then they'll cast their vote.
So we have
Trump.
All these positive factors, and I'm just going to very briefly mention the negative factors. COVID-19, that's not a positive factor for any president. I don't care who they are. That's a huge negative. Then we have an unethical and hostile press that has continually been pushing false narratives, has refused to cover his accomplishments. Add in the deep state and an intelligence committee actively working to overthrow and discredit
and
the
people
president.
On his own cabinet and rhinos in his own right. party. It's like he hasn't had a single friend.
So we have all these factors there, and but let's just say if we had COVID-19 and we had a press that was even halfway fair, I'd still say easy Trump reelection. If we didn't have COVID-19. And we had a fair press, it would be a landslide.
But despite the press and despite COVID, look at how the economy is still bouncing back.
Right.
That's amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have all these factors here. So there, I guess, is that the point of this is there is all these factors that are positives. And what do we have as the negative?
Okay, I'm going to put a hold on that till we get back from our break. My guest is National Review contributor Mike Friedenberg, who correctly called it for Trump in 2016. And he hasn't said it in so many words yet, but I think we're headed perhaps that direction. But find out when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
The verdict is in on Bob Siegel's novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. Readers love it, and they say as much in their customer reviews. Reviews such as this one. Like the Chronicles of Narnia in the last century, the story is fun and mysterious, appropriate for adults as well as kids, and should become a classic. I won't even give any spoilers, but I will say that I couldn't put it down. It makes a point without being preachy. There are twists and turns and a great ending. Like the title object, the story challenges your thinking without leaving you in despair. This book would make an excellent Christmas gift for yourself or others, and it can be enjoyed at any time of the year. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Say hello again to Mike Friedenberg.
Well, Bob, as we were starting to talk about before we took that little break there, is that then we have the polls. And the polls are actually even worse than they were in 2016 in terms of predicting a significant Trump loss. And let me mention something about 2016 about the polls. After that was over, you know, people like Nate Silver from 538 were running around saying, well, we really were that wrong. We said, you know, that Hillary would win by 3 points and she really only won by 2.1. So we were actually pretty close on the national polls. We just missed the states.
She did win the popular vote. She did win. And yet these are the same people that were trying to talk the electors into changing their vote. I'll bet you if any of the electors had done that. Well, one of them did, but if they had succeeded in overthrowing Trump, they'd have loved the Electoral College then. So their consistency is amazing.
So the 80, He was also, his model, which he says that he runs 40,000 times, gave an 85% chance of Hillary Clinton winning right before the election. So he was wrong, but I want to correct the record a bit.
But he still works as a pollster?
He's a data journalist, okay? He's not a pollster. We'll talk a little bit more about him a little bit later on, but because that's important to understand what's going on here with the polls. But I want to correct the record for 2016. If you take out polls like Rasmussen's poll, and you take out like the Investor's Business Daily poll, and then you take out the fact that none of the pollsters expected the huge voting surge from California. If you take those out of the averages and you take California out, they were actually off by 5 or 6 points, not 3 points. Back to 2020. Right now, they're showing Biden up by 7.2 points. Yet, Florida, even the mainstream press media is showing Florida almost, tied. Edge to Biden, but tied, Biden plus 1.2. That doesn't really fit. 7.2 popular vote versus what's happening in Florida, only 1 point. So something's funky going on around here. But before we talk more about the polls, I do want to talk and give some shout outs to some people that really helped me understand things better, that they're actually doing some great work and they're getting criticized for it. The People's Pundit Daily, Richard Barris over there and Robert Barnes, they are pollsters and they do ongoing conversations about how they do their polling. They really gave me a lot of insight and a lot better understanding of what's really happening out there. So thank you to those guys. Robert Cahaley of the Trafalgar poll. He's been a lone maverick out there doing his polling under a lot of pressure, but he's running at 92% accuracy over the last three election cycles. So he's got a record there. Patrick Basham, we'll talk about him a little bit later, but he's formerly from the Cato Institute. He's the Democracy Institute. They did the poll, one of the polls that predicted Trump in 2016. They also predicted Brexit as well. He's very good. And they just came out with a poll 4 hours ago. We'll talk about that a little bit. And then Rasmussen, because Rasmussen, they've been willing to go against the grain, and they bring back some sanity to what's happening in the polling area. And then actually recently, Target Smart, which has made an awesome tool available to the general public that I've been able to use to do my analysis. And then one other quick shout out is in San Diego, we have a supervisor's race, County Board of Supervisors. And I want to personally endorse Joel Anderson for that race. I've known him for 25 years. He's a solid conservative. He is the one solid Republican in the race that you can count on to stand up for.
There are a lot of conservatives going for the Democrat, which is interesting.
He's not I've known Joel for 25 years. He's a movement conservative. He's solidly pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, anti-tax. He was one of the co-chairs of the Trump campaign in 2016.
Yeah, he was one of the few that would put his neck out for Trump back in 16 when a lot of people wouldn't do that.
So the other candidate, which I will not mention the name, has the support of the kind of people that did not support Trump in 2016 and don't like him. But he is a Republican. The Republican that is Republican.
The other guy is a Republican?
Yes, he is.
I thought he was a Democrat.
No, okay, so that's enough about that. Okay. So let's take a 30,000-foot view of the situation. Okay. Now, I actually do believe that there is some malfeasance about how these pollsters are doing things. I think that there is some intentionality, but let's give them the benefit of the doubt for right now. Right now, polling right now in 2020 is twice as hard as 2016.
Because of all the stupid mail-in ballots, for one thing.
Well, but that's part of it. But the other thing is, in 2016... if you were a Trump supporter, you were merely deplorable. In 2020, you're a racist. You're a bigger. And if you announce it, they may come beat you up. They may fire you. If you're a hat, you'll get attacked, beat up. The hostility.
If you wear a red hat, even if it doesn't say MAGA, just a red hat, they'll go, oh, red must be a Trump supporter.
So a lot of Trump voters have gone underground, and there's data to support that. Okay, so even if you're trying to poll like you normally have in the past, unless you go through some extraordinary
means. Underground polls?
We have some polls that use some clever ways to show this vote. So my point is that even if you were working as hard as you did in 2016, but you didn't know about this underlying trend, you could easily make a mistake on the polling. Okay. And however, these guys have systematically rejected the idea that there is such a thing as the shy Trump voter or the hidden Trump voter. They've written papers about it. I've read them. huge papers, hundreds of thousands of words, rejecting the idea that there's a shy Trump voter. So they don't want to believe it. So they're responsible for when they make the miss. It's their responsibility. They own it. And I also believe there's some collusion there among the pollsters. There's a site called 538. It's run by Nate Silver. He's a data journalist, I mentioned before. That is a site that has become the de facto standard for rating the quality of polls. If you want to be considered a good poll, you want to get a good rating from them.
That's interesting. So you've got to almost come up with a politically correct poll.
Right. So the polls that missed Trump in 2016, like let's say the ABC Washington Post poll, gets an A-plus rating from Nate Silver's and 538. Trafalgar, who was one of the few pollsters that get all the battleground states right, and also in the primaries, had a great record in the primaries in 2018, he gets a C-minus rating. Okay, the same thing with Rasmussen. So
people are changing their polls because they want the rate. So they're more interested in the rating than the truth is what I'm hearing
and
you say.
Here's the other thing is if you're part of that poll herd, even if you end up being radically wrong, it's not going to hurt you financially. It's not. You're all together.
You go, well, yeah, we were all wrong.
We were all wrong.
But if you put your neck out, then that's different.
But if you're like a Robert Cahalef from Trafalgar, who actually goes out there and tries to get some good polling, if he ends up being wrong significantly in a number of races, he will be so savagely attacked. So he's got some guts to do what he's doing. I just want to give, acknowledge that. So that's the 30,000 foot poll, view of what's happening with the polling. So it's called herding and mirroring. And these guys are talking to each other, saying, what did you get here? And they're basically getting comfortable with the sort of the echo chamber of their own things. And remember, who funds these polls? It's the media organizations are funding these polls, like the New York Times, the Washington Post.
Oh, you mean the fair, objective Post
right.
and Times? Well,
so
right.
these
they
guys,
only have our best
If these guys want a job, they can't be coming out with polls that help Trump get reelected.
Now, Mike, do you believe there is any actual talk amongst pollsters just claim that Trump is losing so that if he wins,
there is,
we can claim he cheated?
I know by being part of some conversations that this other pollster I'm talking about, Richard Barris, he actually talks to some of these other pollsters. He knows, so he's a pollster. Yes, there is talk among the pollsters. Absolutely.
That they're trying to slant it so that they can make it look like Trump stole the election.
All I can say is they talk to each other about the results, and whether they say, hey, let's slant it against Trump, they may say, you know what, I'm showing this. You say, I've seen that. Oh, yeah, you might want to consider this. They have those kind of conversations.
Well, something's making Pelosi confident because the other day she said, let me be clear, Joe Biden will win. It doesn't matter what happens Tuesday night. Joe Biden will win. Now, where would she get that idea? That's interesting.
If you look at the polls and you believe them, and there's a lot of people that
no,
do
No, but
believe
she's
them.
Saying, that, yeah, but if you believe the polls, then Biden would win on Tuesday night. Pelosi's saying even if Biden doesn't win on Tuesday night, he's not winning.
That's
now, what
issue,
is she
Bob,
coming from with
about,
that?
Yeah,
okay.
We'll probably
be talking about that because this is probably going to go on until January.
Right. But so it is hard to poll right now. And even like the really good pollsters like Richard Barris at People's Pundit Daily, he has been frustrated because right now, he's getting a 1% response rate. To get one response, he has to do 100 contacts, whether it's an online poll or a phone call or whatever method. He uses multiple methods. Then it takes him 5 times as many contacts to get a hold of a Republican that's willing to do a poll. And Trump supporters, he basically said there's parts of Pennsylvania that he just puts his hands up. He's doing his best to reach them. These are big Trump areas. You cannot reach them. And he's using the most sophisticated ways. So if he's having the trouble, just believe me that the major pollsters aren't catching these Trump voters.
Now, if somebody was trying to do an honest scientific poll, how would they factor in the harvest balloting and the many ballots that were sent out? I know people that get 3-4 ballots.
But that doesn't come into the polling. That's after the fact.
So they have to just say, we have to ignore that and look at the polls as if it's going to be a fair election.
That wouldn't be part of the polling question. That would be what's happening after the votes are coming in. So that's sort of a separate issue, but it is an important issue. Yes. So you have all these factors that make polling very hard, and that's one of the reasons you're seeing an underrepresented Trump vote. And I also believe that for the mainstream pollsters funded by the mainstream media or their university pollsters, let's think about it. Let's say you're the blue-collar worker in middle of Pennsylvania, and you like Trump, and you've been watching 4 years of him being savaged by the media – the mainstream media, then you get a call, hey, I'm from the Washington Post, Times, poll. Or I'm from one of the universities, you know, the universities that are shutting down free speech. This is just, you just cannot get them to do a poll.
Not to mention that even if they said they were going to vote for Trump, how do we know some of those pollsters would even report it accurately?
Okay, so that's enough of beating that dead horse. But polls are hard to get. So, and if you really don't want to hear the answer, then it's really easy to get the answer that you want to hear. So let's put it that way. The bare minimum, they're getting the answers they want to hear and not working hard to find the answer that they don't want to hear. That's at least a fair statement, I would say. Okay, then you look at the early voting, and story after story has been touting about, oh, wow, this just, by the way, we got the same thing in 2016 about how early voting was going against Trump. It was predicting a blue wave. Well, I have been able to spend the last couple of days, it's actually interesting, my son had mentioned this tool called Target Smart, and I've been hearing about it, but I didn't believe that a tool like that would be available for general use. Well, it is, and it's a wonderful tool. And with it, I was able to do a lot of deep dive analysis. So the last 2 days, I've been just crunching through numbers with the help of that tool. It's, by the way, it's probably a Democrat-leading tool, by the way. It does modeling. It may have a slight bias to the Democrats, but even with that, I will just tell you that there is no huge advantage for the Democrats in the early voting. And if anything, if I were just to walk in and look at the early voting without looking at the polling or anything else, I'd be going, wow, is it possible that there's a red wave coming? That's how skewed the early voting is. It is not a negative for Trump. It is a positive for Trump. I will just say that.
Well, they've succeeded in frightening the Democrats out of their wits. So it makes sense that they might have done a lot of the early voting. And they are expecting the high majority of the Trump voters to come out in person on Election Day.
It's interesting. It's breaking down this way. In states that allow in-person early voting, Republicans are churning out in very comparable numbers to the Democrats. In other words, you can walk into a polling place, do your polling right there, and get it in. In states, though, where they're making you churn in your ballot either by absentee mail or actually having a completed ballot and just dropping it off, those states, the Republicans aren't voting. So so I call it the Trump effect. Trump warned about mail-in ballots or turning in a ballot, you know, where you don't actually get to see it go in, where you have the chance to verify signatures, possibly disqualify them. Well, it's been huge. So in states where you can actually vote in person, the Republicans are matching the Democrats. And in fact, compared to 2016, in many cases, looking better than they did in 2016. But in states like Pennsylvania and I think Arizona, is it Arizona? Yep, certainly Pennsylvania and Nevada, maybe, where you have to complete your ballot, sign it and put it in a thing and turn it in, if rather than voting in a polling booth, the Democrats have been doing all the early voter turnout 2-1 over the Republicans. But the Republicans are interestingly poised to have a massive day of the election voter turnout. And one of the ways I've been able to figure this out is by looking at married voters. Married voters in general are more conservative and vote Republican. Well, what you find is that compared to 2016, and when you look at the early votes already in, you see a pattern where there's more potential married voters left to vote on election day than there is potential single person voters. So more married women are going to be voting on election day by far than single women are going to be voting. More married men are going to be voting on election day than single men. And that is a plus for Republicans. That's one of the factors. Age. You mentioned that the working class men, you know, during those focus group sessions, were really upset and started to get upset with Biden when he starts talking about lockdowns. Well, what we're seeing now is that there's no doubt that Trump lost some of the senior vote. The good news on that is right now, most of the seniors have put their votes in, you know, good or bad news, whatever it is, that there's very few senior votes going to be happening on Election Day. They've actually took advantage of the mail-in ballots because they were afraid of coronavirus more so than anybody else. So they are the one group that really took advantage of the mail-in ballots overwhelmingly was the 65 and older. That group, probably Trump lost some support. We don't know the exact amount. I still think he probably did okay, but he probably lost the support from 2016.
Well, that group also tends to be more conservative too. So some of that might have balanced out.
Well, even taking into account that group is more conservative, he probably did lose some of the votes.
Right, because they were frightened to death.
Right, yeah. They were. However, the 40 to 65 age group, we're starting to see that group come out in bigger numbers. And there's polling to suggest that group, Donald Trump's message of no shutdowns and getting the nation back to work, is resonating with that group.
Honestly, Mike, if that was the only message they were getting from Trump after these 6-7 months of lockdown, of course it's going to resonate.
So that group is coming out. And that's, I've looked at state after state. I looked at the Rust Belt states. I looked at the swing states. And even on the overall national averages, you see that trend. And then age in general, too. By the way, there's no overwhelming number of young voters, 18 to 24 voters, coming out to overwhelm the election. There may be some more of them, but they will be countered by increases in other groups as well. So we're not going to be dominated by young, you know, anti-Trump voters or a big surge of, you know, Antifa and BLM voters. That's not happening. The early vote does not show that. That is just completely, utterly bogus. So that's at the 30,000 foot level. So then we have states we want to watch here. And let me go here to, I have a list of these states here. We're going to quickly just kind of go down and talk a little about the Electoral College here. States that are supposedly competitive, but I'm going to say are really going to be solidly Trump. These are considered battleground states. There's a much...
Okay, so now we're going to get into the specifics.
We're right, getting specifics.
Some of these battlegrounds. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, so Arizona. Arizona's supposed to be a battleground state. It is close, but...
I tend to not think of it as battleground.
But it is.
I'm thinking of it as red.
There's been polls showing Trump behind in it, literally.
Right, but then you've questioned some of those.
And right
polls,
now, the RCP average, Real Clear Project, only shows them up by 0.6. But I'm going to tell you that I believe, based upon some polling that I've looked at from some of the real pollsters, that Arizona is solid. In particular, People's Pundit Daily has done a poll that shows them solid. Trafalgar shows them solid. So let's take that off the table.
Trafalgar is one of the most accurate ones.
North Carolina, that is also going to go Trump again. I'm going to go down these quickly because we could discuss each one in detail, but I believe both based upon early voting and polling, it's going to go Trump. Same thing with Ohio. Iowa. Iowa, just huge. Iowa, a poll that had, 4 weeks ago had shown Trump tied in Iowa, just came out. It was the Des Moines Register poll, which supposedly the most accurate poll in the state of Iowa, shows Trump up by +7. And it also showed Joni Ernst. Actually now beating her opponent.
Well, that's good, because remember, ladies and gentlemen, we've got to hold on to the Senate and we've got to take back the House, so too, or Trump winning isn't going to really matter.
That poll, by the way, sent a shock through Democrat circles. Believe me, it did, because that is a very rep. That was big. Okay, in Georgia is, there's two seats up for whatever reason, because one of them was a replacement seat. There's two seats up for Republicans fighting for re-election. It's going to be close, but I'm going to say both Trump's going to win it, number one.
And you're going to call both of the seats? These are Senate seats. Okay.
U.S. Senate. Then we have Texas. Texas ain't going to be close.
I'm always hearing about Texas being purple. Maybe there's a slight trend, but it hasn't gotten purple.
Texas is not going to be close. The New York Times Siena poll even gives Trump +5. So
that must have just choked the New York Times to have to say something like that. But they must have been kicking and screaming, like, all right, he's up.
Yeah, that poll actually just means to me that is the bottom basement. That is the bottom basement of Trump's going to get. I actually think he'll be closer to 7 to 8%. Okay. Florida. Florida is one of those states that's, you know, a battleground state. And I've now seen enough polling, and I've looked at the early voting data to say Florida goes Trump.
Well, they've turned back to normal, and Biden's made it very clear that they're going to go back to the new normal, which means a dark shutdown. Of course they're going to stay with Trump.
And Trump could pull 50% of the Latino vote there.
Yeah, well, now how's that possible, Mike, when he's a racist? How could so many Latinos and African-Americans be voting for
Cuban
this?
The Cuban vote loves him. Some of the Cubans that didn't trust him in 2016, now love him.
Well, the Cubans' parents and grandparents are telling them what it was like in Cuba under Castro, and they're listening carefully to Bernie Sanders.
And then you've got about 70,000 Venezuelans that have fled Venezuela, which is a socialist, a horrible place.
Those are the people we should be listening to.
And they're going to be 80% voting for Trump. So there's a lot of reasons there. So, okay, so now we get into where the real competition is, because we're not at 270 votes with those states yet. But we're
Minnesota, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin.
We have Nebraska, too. Second congressional Nebraska.
I wasn't aware that Nebraska was in the... That's a swing state, Nebraska?
Yeah, they have a couple staff swing. Oh, they do things by correction.
Smack in the middle of the country. So anyway, I always thought of them as red. Oh, well.
I'm saying that that's based upon what some other people said and what makes sense. That's probably going to go Trump. That's one electoral vote. Maine, two. That's probably going to go Trump. That's an electoral vote.
Doesn't Maine split theirs anyway?
Yeah, right. But Maine, too, he's going to get that vote. That's a battleground congressional district that gets you at a electoral vote. Okay. Michigan. All right.
I don't believe he carried Michigan last time.
He did carry Michigan.
He did carry Michigan. Was it Wisconsin that he didn't carry?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So we now got to really blaze your box. I got 5 minutes.
All right.
So Michigan. Michigan, I'm going to say close but leaning Trump. So it could definitely go Trump. Pennsylvania, close but leaning Trump. Minnesota. Minnesota's closer than I thought it was going to be. That could definitely close go Trump. So I'm going to say 50-50 on Minnesota right now. And then other Trumps, actually, Nevada is now in play. Nevada could definitely go Trump. So now I want to just throw in one more ingredient. About 4 hours ago, the Democracy Institute released a new poll, a nationwide poll of 1,500 people. And this is huge. That poll shows Donald Trump up by plus 1 points in the national polling, plus one popular vote over Biden. That's national. And I'm willing to give that poll more credence than I'm on these other national polls showing Trump down 7, 8, 9, 10 points. So when I factor that in there to the effect it's going to have on all these marginal states, if that's true, then I'm very comfortably predicting over 280 electoral votes for Donald Trump, over 280. And that would be a win. And we could be in the 300s. And really, we could actually even have a red wave. And the rationale for the red wave is this. If you're a Republican, and you're any kind of Republican, and you see what's been happening over these last 4 years, especially the last couple of years, and even if you're a low propensity Republican, and you're a Republican for some reason, you've just got to be alarmed. You must be just terrified about what's happening in the country. You're coming out and voting, okay? If you're a conservative-leaning independent or you're a Republican-leaning independent, you're going to vote for Trump. And we are going to see a bigger voter turnout. Texas has already matched its voter turnout for 2016. However, unlike what they were trying to say, that it's all brand-new voters that are anti-Trump, it's a lot of these voters are pro-Trump, and so Texas is going to still stay Trump. And we're going to see this. We could, instead of like 134 million, we could see 150 million people. And I think that a case can be made that this, rather than being a blue wave, could be a red wave. Now, I'm not certain about that, but I think that there's a case that we could be talking about a red wave. And I'm giving that 50-50. I'm giving Trump win like 65 to 70%. I'm giving the red wave 50%.
Now, let me ask you this. A lot of people in Texas last time, even who loved Trump, may not have felt the need to vote for him because they knew he was going to take Texas. California, the opposite. They could have been for Trump, but they assumed he wasn't. Do you suppose he might get more in both states from Republicans and conservatives, independents, thinking we've got to make sure he wins the popular vote, too, just so they don't give that stupid, well, he didn't win the popular vote narrative.
The never Trump vote, which was somewhat significant in 2016, it has dissipated tremendously. There's a few hardcore ones left. Like Ben Shapiro was one of the biggest anti-Trump
guys. He just came out with a whole case for voting for Trump.
Right. He didn't do it as classily as he should have because he still has a hard time admitting he was wrong.
Glenn Beck was against Trump too, and now he loves Trump.
I think that a lot of the people, you know, I don't agree with their analysis, but there was a lot of genuinely conservative people that just did not trust Trump. They didn't believe that he was pro-life when he said he was pro-life because he had not been pro-life in the past. They did not believe he was going to do. And then you add in the fact that
they viewed him as a populist, not as a conservative.
And then they were very upset when he attacked, you know, John McCain for, you know, your losers get captured. You know, those kind of things that Trump has said that probably didn't, you know, weren't the smartest things to say.
But the military today absolutely loves him.
Yes.
Okay, we have just a few seconds, Mike.
So
I need to ask you to make your final.
My final prediction is Trump wins. That's 70 to 80%. So Trump wins, number one. And also look at Florida. Watch Florida. If Trump wins Florida by greater than 1 point, that's going to push North Carolina in. That's going to mean the really good news for everything.
Okay.
So Florida is the bellwether state you want to watch, and watch that.
Quickly, do we keep the Senate?
Yes. Actually, I believe that we've got a very good chance to keep the Senate
right
now.
Do we take the House?
That is a little harder. I'd say we've got at least a 50% chance of taking the House, though.
I hope so. Pelosi just grates on me. I'm sorry, folks. She just grates on me. Well, folks, you heard it here. Let's hope it happens like it did 4 years ago. Mike and I together will be at a election party on Tuesday night. So we'll either be celebrating together or going, well, you know, God is still on his throne. Okay. All right. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show, and I will see you next week.
The Bob Siegel Show podcast is a production of Bob Siegel and Cross Global Media. Visit us online and subscribe to the show at cgmradio.com/Bob.